Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the three-time world champion, San Francisco Giants. Let's go, Giants! With hosts Chad King and Eric Nathanson. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, August 23rd, 2021, and this is episode 235 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of your San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad, and joining me today, as always, from, is it muggy, is it dry? It's never muggy in Vegas, right? It's Eric Nathanson from Vegas. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. It's muggy for like 3 weeks during monsoon season.
Oh, monsoon. That's it.
Yeah, no, we're just at triple digits for the next 2 weeks, which is not bad because it's only like 102, 103, so that's manageable. You get used to it. You really do. Like 75 has become like a good temperature for me at this point inside. Mm-hmm. But how are things up north?
I got to admit, it's been a little temperate, I would say, this summer. I know we're in global warming and everything, but this particular summer in the Bay Area has not been too bad. But it's been dry. That's the problem, right? California's going through a major drought. I'm sure, you know, I know Vegas is connected to that, the whole Southwest. So, yeah, not the best in the long term. But you know what? I like my 75-degree days. That's what we had yesterday. It was fantastic.
Wow. I would take that in a heartbeat, man.
I know, right?
It gets none of that overnight. We've been dealing with some of the smoke from the fires in California. Mm-hmm. We've had a couple of days that the air quality is not very good. Like, I couldn't see the mountains the other day. It was kind of crazy.
Yeah, we've avoided most of that in like the last couple of summers. We get some here and there. But talking about smoking, unfortunately, the Los Angeles Dodgers have been on fire lately. And even though the Giants went 4-2 this week, and they are the first team to 80 wins. I can't believe we're talking about 80 wins. And we have 8 games left in August, let alone all of September. And they're one game away from 500, guaranteeing a 500 season. It just blows my mind, but they have a 2.5-game lead in the West. It looked like it was going to be much smaller. In fact, Eric texted me and Willie over the weekend, or maybe the beginning of the weekend, was like, I don't know if the Giants are going to be in first place after the A's series here. But LA won 9 in a row before they finally lost yesterday. I mean, it's just one of those things where you knew it was coming, right, Eric? I mean, obviously the Dodgers have been good all year, but you just expected that run where they were going to pull off like this 9 in a row or 15 out of 16 or something like that. And here it is. And what's crazy about it is that the Giants right now are in the midst of having their best month so far in terms of winning percentage. They are 15-5 in the month of August. They still have 8 games left. But here's their month-by-month record. April, they were 16-10. May, 18-10. That's their best month so far before August. June, 16-9, July, 15-10, and of course now they're 15-5. So they've already guaranteed themselves a winning month. Even if they lost all 8 games, Eric, they'd be 15-13 for the month. Fairly successful for most teams. That ain't going to cut it with the Dodgers following you, right? I mean, no. The Giants could finish with their best monthly record at like, I don't know, if they go 4-4, they'll be 19-9 for the month. And yet, most likely, they're going to lose ground and may not even be in first place.
That's crazy to think about. I mean, the Dodgers are such a streaky team. They are the juggernaut-type team that when they get on a roll, they get rolling. Every day, it just seems like they keep continuing, cycling people through the base paths. The Giants don't have that as much, which is what makes them still being 2.5 up after the weekend so much more impressive. I mean, the Dodgers, it took forever. Granted, they were playing the Pirates. I mean, still, though, the Pirates, the Mets, the Giants lost to these
teams. They got the same records, right? Or the same schedules, so.
Yeah, exactly. And the Giants definitely didn't take care of business against those teams at times. But, like, the Dodgers have also gone through a prolonged losing skid earlier in the year where they lost, like, 15 of 18 or something like that to put them behind the eight ball with the Giants. So I think it just shows how much streakier they are. And the Giants playing steady baseball, I think, they should be able to hold on to this. 2.5 games, you're right. I texted you guys. It was Saturday afternoon. It was probably the eighth inning, and it looked like the Giants were the seventh inning, and it looks like the Giants were going to get beat once again. And then homer, and then bigger homer. And then winning again yesterday and the Dodgers losing, it changed from me being worried the Giants were going to be in second place to them suddenly being 2.5 up, which is almost as big as they started the month. I mean, that's ridiculous. They were 3 games up to start the month, and mm-hmm. they went 15-5, and they lost half a game.
Yep. I know. It's crazy. And it's kind of a microcosm of the entire second half. The Giants are 23-12 in the second half, which is a .657 winning percentage. That's better than their first half winning percentage, which was .640. Yet the Dodgers are 22-12 in the second half, a half game better than the Giants in the second half. So they've gained a half game the entire second half. I mean, we're frustrated as Giants fans that the Dodgers won't go away, but Dodgers fans have got to be even more so frustrated because they're like, these are the Giants. How are the Giants doing this? I don't understand. I mean, it doesn't matter how well the Dodgers play. They just can't seem to catch the Giants. And I just read those monthly records off for you, and I think you just hit the nail on the head. The Giants are super consistent. I mean, they're not like, you know, one of the months they're, you know, 12-16 or something. I mean, every single month is a .600 or hovering around that winning percentage. It's remarkable how consistent they are. They haven't lost more than 4 in a row. They finally got a 6-game winning streak a couple of weeks ago, but they haven't gone on a 9 or 10 or 11 gamer. They're just, I mean, resilient SF or resilient AF, as you put it, has been the appropriate hashtag this year.
I mean, look at this. You said it. They've lost 3-1 in a row once and 4 in a row once, and that's it. That's literally the only two streaks of more than 2 losses in a row all season, which I don't know. In the annals of history, if they keep this up through the end of the season, I have to wonder if they're one of the first teams to ever really put together a season like that. It's just something we've never seen before, and it's fantastic that they are able to keep pace with the Dodgers. I mean, Dodgers fans going nuts is so fun. They just keep trying to explain it away. They come up with every excuse in the book. One week it's, you know, the Giants are cheating at this. Another week it's the umpires did this for them. And it's never that the Giants earned it. And as we saw over the last week, the Giants definitely earned their victories.
Yeah, for sure. You know, the standings are they, you know, what they are. I think the one thing that's been shocking is everybody picked the Padres and Dodgers. Padres and Dodgers. Padres and Dodgers. Hell, even I picked the Padres and Dodgers. Same. Padres are doing Padre things right now. They have faded significantly. They are now actually officially out of the second wild card spot. I did not see that coming, Eric. I really didn't. They're one game now behind the Reds. They're 13 games behind the Giants, so they're basically a complete non-factor in the division race, other than, of course, the fact that they do play the Giants 10 more times. It's not that they can't affect the Giants' fortunes, but, I mean, the Padres are clearly out of the NL West race, and they're just going for a wild card, and their Padres are their fans are freaking out, too.
I would be. I mean, you're 13 back in the division now, 10 back of L.A. Mm-hmm. You know, they were supposed to be the team that hung with the Dodgers all season. And, you know, that's why everybody was skeptical going into this season about the Padres. They're the Padres. They're eventually going to Padre it up. And apparently they decided to do that. I mean, so much so that there's rumblings that Tingler could get fired and Bochy could come in and replace him. Yeah. Which I think would be very fun and interesting, and I'd totally be on board with facing Bochy a bunch. That'd be kind of cool. But the Reds snuck in there. You know, they can't catch their division either. Probably Milwaukee's 7.5 ahead, so they know that their door is through the wild card. So, you know, it's fun to see that it's turned into a race, and it's not just the Dodgers and the Padres pulling away with it. At least the Reds have made something out of it, and St. Louis could even make a charge, or Philly could make a charge if they get hot.
I know this sounds maybe, I wouldn't want to call it pessimistic, but obviously the Giants and Dodgers are going to duke it out for this division, right? And no matter who wins it, they're guaranteed the NLDS, and whoever loses it has got to play that one game playoff, whether it be against the Padres or against the Reds, which it looks like are the two most likely teams. The crazy thing is, if you're the Padres and you sneak into the wild, not sneak in, but you get into the wild card game, and let's say you finish 15 games out of the West, or even more, right?
Yeah.
All it takes is that one win, right? One win, and you've made up 15 games just like that, and you're in the NLDS against that team, and you can bounce them with 3 victories. I think that's what's crazy about it, and that's what's going to be frustrating from the perspective of either the Dodgers or the Giants, whoever gets that top wild card, they might be 10 or more games ahead of the Padres hosting the wild card game. And yet the Padres can bounce them, or the Reds can bounce them in one game. And I think that's, to me, that's one of the drawbacks of this whole wild card system. It's down to one game. You have one bad game, even if you finish way ahead of the other team, doesn't matter. It's the playoffs. This is what you're built for, and you all agreed to it. So from a Giants fan perspective, I just get worried, like, you know, not that's not the house of cards falling if they finish in the wild card. The Dodgers are a great team. I think the Giants are going to finish with 95 to 100 or even more wins. Yeah. If they get the wild card, they get the wild card. But this has the shades, semi-shades of 1993 written all over it, if that were to happen. You know, they get the wild card and they get bounced by the lower seed, and then their season's done. And you're just like, wait, what? They had the second best record in the majors and they're done?
No matter how they get in, we're going to be fretting as Giants fans, because it's either going to be, oh, crap, we're the wild card with a 10-11 game lead, or, oh, crap, we're the number one seed, and now we got to play the Dodgers or the Padres, you know, and got to defend that right away. It's going to be very uncomfortable, I think, come playoff time for us Giants fans. I don't want to say I'm not looking forward to this, but the unexpectedness of it all makes it kind of uncomfortable. We all thought it was going to take a little bit for the Giants to compete, and now being the team that just constantly wins, although it's so funny because places like The Athletic, and I don't want to dive into power rankings, but because of the Dodgers week, they put the Dodgers back up over the Giants in the power. Like, it doesn't matter that the Giants maintained a 2.5 game lead and had a great week themselves. I mean, the Giants should have been 5-1 this week, but went 4-2, and they lost the game probably to the Dodgers at that point.
Yeah.
So it's just the thought of being that 105 win team that, I mean, because they could win 105 games. They have 38 games left. They could absolutely win 105 games. What do they got to go? 25-13 over their last?
Their winning percentage right now puts them at 104.48 wins. So you're right there, Eric. It's 100. Yeah. They're on pace for 104/105 wins. They're right in between if they maintain this winning percentage. So, yeah.
And that's going to freak us out. It's going to be like, achievable. Oh, my God, the Giants won 106 games. And you know, are they going to lose in the first round? We're going to be freaking out, man.
I know.
Shades
of Seattle Mariners, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
right?
That's what it reminds me of more than anything else. Because 93, I mean, the Giants had such a huge lead, and the Braves went out and made this move, and the Giants didn't go out and make a move or do anything as nearly as big as the Braves getting Fred McGriff. And this year that just didn't happen. And like these teams like the Padres and the Red Sox that barely made any moves are free falling all of a sudden and getting caught by the other teams. So, you know,
yeah. Look at the Yankees, right? They're like on fire with all the moves.
They're red hot. Yeah, you were talking about a team that's hot. Like the Dodgers and the Yankees are the two hottest teams in baseball right now.
Yep.
Yankees could very much get back into the thick of it. What are they? They're still 4.5 back in the division, but they are leading the wild card now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I mean, hey, look, we're in a good place. Mike Dowling says, let's keep it positive, guys. No, we're positive. We're just, you know, I think just as Giants fans, we always kind of hope that doesn't happen. Hope it's not the wild card one game and out, because it's going to be that like 162 game buildup to just, and then it's over. And it's like, wait, what happened?
I mean, all this, you know, the Giants have had the best, right? But all this, the Giants have had the best record in baseball stuff won't matter if they go one and done. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like being the best in baseball for 4 months won't matter if they go one and done against like the Reds.
Yeah. Like if they lose a 5-game series like they did in 2016, right? They lost it 3-1. But, you know, we still were playing the what ifs. But you go, okay, the Cubs won it. It was their year. It was destiny. And, you know, they ended the curse. So good for them. You know, but, you know, that last game where they had that 3-run lead in the ninth inning and they couldn't close it down. If they had won that game, which 95 times out of 100 or more, you're going to win that game, they would have flown back to Chicago tied with Johnny Cueto going, who was just dominant in his first start. And the Cubs fans were freaking out online. They were like, oh, my God, we're going to lose a 2-0 lead. And
that's the position.
It's the curse. It's the curse. It's the curse, you know.
That's the position we'll be in, though. If the Giants, you know, win 105 games and they're up like 2-1 in a playoff series and something wonky happens, we'll be like, oh, no, it's the Giants. They're going to blow it. I mean, it's just natural as a Giants fan. You can't help it. 93 yeah. scars you. 2002 scars you. All those years of not having a good team scar you. Yep. But, I mean, you know, everything is gravy. I posed the question in the Giants chatter group last night. I said, you know, what's everybody's expectation for this year at this point?
I think
the general consensus is it's gravy. Like, it doesn't matter. I mean, yeah, you want them to win a World Series this year. But if they come up short, I mean, I definitely feel like the Giants will be there for years to come.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
they're not a flash in the pan team. Signing Crawford really shows that they're trying to anchor for a long-term run of success here.
They are playing with house money. They are probably 2 years ahead of schedule. They have virtually no pressure on them in terms of the expectations from the beginning of the year. And all of the pressure is on the Dodgers. All of it. They are the ones that were picked to win the World Series. They are defending World Series champions. They are the ones spending the most money. They're the ones that have won however many eight divisions in a row. They're the ones that are supposed to be doing this, and they're losing right now. Well, you know what I mean. They're trailing in the division. I agree. Whatever the Giants do, technically, really, everything you look at, it's gravy. If you told me at the beginning of the season, hey, the Giants are going to make it to the wild card game and they're going to lose it, I'd be like, what? Okay, that's like better than I thought they'd be. But your expectations change as the season goes on. It's a long season, 162 games. And so when you're three quarters of the way through it, and they got the best record in baseball, now you start getting a little greedy, a little like, no. Hey, we've tasted this before. We've been there before three times, and now you're kind of thinking about 7 years ago. And you're like, I want that again. I want it again. Why can't I have my cake and eat it too? God damn it. But we'll get there. Well, one game at a time.
We've talked about it on this show. The expectation going into every game is the Giants are going to win, right? So in theory, we should be able to practice that in the postseason. But I'm not sure we'll feel that way. But it's true that we do, and I think that's really what highlights how good this team is. Is we really do every single day. We feel like the Giants have a chance to win. It doesn't matter who's starting for them and anything like that. Every day the Giants go out there, we think, okay, they're going to win. And by the end of the day, they usually are the team slapping hands and giving hugs. You know, I heard a real fun story about Solano and La Stella, where they apparently are pulling for each other so much in the second base platoon that they hug each other when they're passing the baton in a game. So before Solano came up to pinch hit yesterday, he got hugged by La Stella in the dugout. So he got hugged before the home run instead of after hitting the home run.
Hey, maybe that's going to start something.
I love that. I mean, it's the selflessness.
Bad hug, yeah.
it highlights the selflessness of this team. It's really just kind of unbelievable how every guy seems to just want to take on their role. They understand the preparation and need it. And I think that's why we feel so confident going into every single game. I mean, we don't always expect it to be a Lamont Wade or Donovan Solano doing the damage, but we know somebody's going to do it.
All right. Well, let's go ahead and dive into the last week of Giants ball. We had six games to talk about. The first series was against the New York Mets at home at Oracle Park. You know, the Mets came stumbling in after being swept by the Dodgers, and they knew they had a tough road ahead. I mean, I was looking at the Mets social media, and they had 12 straight games against the Giants and the Dodgers. Could you imagine that? I mean, whatever team it is, right? Let's go back a couple of years when the Giants weren't good. You got to go play the number one and two teams in all of baseball for 12 straight games, and you're trying to compete for a playoff spot yourself. That's a gauntlet, man, and they have not done well, Eric.
They are the first team since the 1980 Blue Jays to play that many games in a row against teams over 600.
Wow, that's a nice stat. I did not hear that, but I mean,
I heard on radio one night.
It is rough, and it's not going well for the Mets so far. So
no, and they got three more now coming with the Giants coming in. Anyway, let's go back to them losing.
That's right. So that first game, you know, it wasn't a back-and-forth affair, but the Mets did grab an early lead. But Chris Bryant, who actually overall did not have the best week of all weeks, had a fantastic game starting off with these two hits.
Hit well to center field. Nimmo back, still going back, and goodbye! Over the center field wall, and the Giants jump back ahead. Chris Bryant goes deep.
Again, one of those balls we've seen so many this year that have cleared the new center field wall that would not have been home runs. And that definitely has helped increase their home run total this year. But I would love to see an analysis of how many might have been expected to be outs, right? Because we've seen center fielders playing deep, track them down. Oh, here's his second hit.
It was the first pitch of the at-bat, too, right after belt homer.
That's right. 6-3. Two pitches in a row by Belt.
Yeah. He was up there looking for a slider. Belt's another one who had a good week with the home run ball, but didn't necessarily didn't hit in other situations. But KB was definitely the star of the show. It was nice. It's like it felt like he won the game for the Giants that day. The trade paid off all in one game. And I believe, what was that, a Logan Webb start? No, Webb was the next day. That was Gausman. He came in and did that after Gausman got pulled, the first home run.
Right, right. Yeah, Gausman, who again has shown a lot of problems in the second half so far. It's been very concerning. He hasn't been trashed every start, but he is not the first half Gausman at all, not even close. So, you know, we were talking about a one-game playoff series or your number one starter in the playoffs, even that. You know, first half, you're like, oh, Kevin Gausman all the way. Like, there's no other person. And now, I'd have to say Logan Webb. I really would. Yeah. If that game was tomorrow, I mean, how else can you not say Logan Webb? I know there would be an argument for Gausman. Overall, his stats are still slightly better than Webb. But it's kind of one of those things where you got to go with who's been good recently, right? And Webb's been phenomenal over his last 12 starts. Gausman is not. So I think you got to go with that.
You know, that game, the Giants did what they always do, which is work the starting pitcher. And Rich Hill was out after 3 2/3. And they had his number. They totally did. It felt like the Mets had to get him out of there. And then having Bryant run into one off the kid who throws hard. They said it in the broadcast, you know, sometimes the pitch will supply the power. And it was just another example of the Giants relying on the home run.
Found a way to get through the Dick Mountain. It worked.
Dick Mountain.
So then game two of the series, where the Giants are back in their City Connect creamsicle jerseys for the sixth time, holding a 2-0 lead in the bottom of the seventh, with Evan Longoria fresh off the IL, came up to bat with no one on and no one out.
There's a high drive in the deep left field. This has a chance way back there, and goodbye! He was on the injured list for 2 months, his first home run since coming back. That has to feel good. 3-0 Giants.
Home run number 10 for number 10. Sinker down and in, drop the head, and ride it right on out of here. And that's a big
And how
run.
Many I gotta ask the question. I didn't look this up. How many players
I'm going there now.
Giants have now have
that's
10
so
more
funny.
Home runs?
I thought I had a window open that had it, and it didn't. I have to go back one page. That's so funny. Let's see here. All right.
It's
we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. He makes 9. And Austin Slater's next. That ties, I believe, the San Francisco or Giants record for most players with 10 home runs in a season.
Yeah.
And Slater is knocking on the door. He's got 9. And who knows? Maybe Donnie Solano and his 6 could sneak up there as well.
Isn't that incredible? I mean, I know KB's got 21, but he's only hit 3 with the Giants, so he counts as being over 20, but he didn't hit all 20 with the Giants. I guess Crawford's at 19, still sitting there. Crawford's going to hit 20. You know, Lamont probably going to hit 20, but none of these guys are going to hit 30. You know,
nope.
None of them. And that's what's going to be crazy is if the Giants end up leading all of baseball or at least the National League and not have one guy crack 30. That's pretty crazy. That is pretty
That shows, again, everything goes back to
depth.
Farhan. And,
depth.
Yeah, depth, you know? Depth is the key. You know, and this is all a good moment to talk about Longo. He got hit on the finger the next day. This guy's just had crap luck. With the injuries, you know, it's just he got hit on a hand in Miami either last year or 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. His collision with Crawford, getting hit on the hand here again when he was swinging at a pitch, he got hit on the finger. Like, I mean, this guy's had the worst luck. You know, you'd think other people would be insulted when they traded for Chris Bryant, but he's probably got to be like, oh, at least we got that guy to cover for me.
It's amazing what the strings that they're pulling. But yeah, you referenced Logan Webb did pitch that game number 2. They ended up winning and holding on 3-2. The previous game, by the way, I don't think I said the final score. They won 7-5. Yeah, it was another gem by Webb. He's been fantastic. Tommy La Stella had his second home run of the year. As you just heard, Longo went deep for his number 10th home run. And the Giants are now 6-0 in the City Connect, much to my chagrin. But you know what? Whatever works. Because clearly it's the jerseys. I know someone.
Yeah, I think Webb probably has like three of them, it feels like.
You could look at the pitching and go, well, if Webb keeps. Yeah, exactly. But I don't know what kind of deal they have with Nike, but I'm presuming that they will not wear these in the playoffs. I've never seen these kind of things used in the playoffs. But it would be funny if, because I think the Giants have at least one, if not two more games in the Creamsicles. If they end up going 7-0 or 8-0, it's like, I wonder if they're going to bargain with MLB. Hey, can we wear these in the playoffs?
Well, I mean, fans do have to get used to them. They're going to be around apparently next year and the year after because seven teams did it this year. And by the end of 2023, all 30 teams will have their own City Connect. Apparently teams like the Yankees reached out and said, hey, wait, we kind of want to do this too. I can totally picture them doing like a Bronx theme or something. So it's really going to be, every team's going to have them. So get used to it, folks. The creamsicles are selling and the teams want to keep them.
No matter how much I dislike the creamsicles, it has nothing to do with hating the Dodgers. Those were abhorrent. They unveiled their City Connect over this week, and they were the last of seven teams to do so. And the first image of Walker Buehler in his windup with his leg up, wearing those dark blue pants with the dark blue jersey with the black paint on the sleeve. And then the hat doesn't say L.A. It says Los Dodgers, like in full script like it did on their jerseys. So their hats look like they were from a softball team because, you know, you don't see full names on hats. That's just not a thing. I think it looks cheap and a knockoff. But immediately I thought, oh, my God, Walker Buehler is wearing skinny jeans. That's going to look like it looked like all the Dodgers were wearing skinny jeans. It was horrible, man.
It looked very softball.
Oh God, I don't understand. Some of them were pretty cool looking. I kind of dig the White Sox ones. I know it was a little, you know, gangsta kind of, but I, aside from that, I like the fawn and the pinstripe. I don't know. I kind of like the look. You know, some of the others weren't the worst.
Miami was cool too. I liked Miami.
Miami was all right.
Yeah. They have these, they wear theirs, you know, every Dodgers, I'm sure will wear theirs now every certain home games. I noticed the Cubs were wearing theirs again on Friday. So the Cubs do it for Friday home games.
Yeah.
So
and theirs weren't keep up awful either. You know, they were darker, but they had Wrigleyville across the front and it classic font. It's fine. It wasn't
yeah. Good, I agree though. The Dodgers could have done something different, but it didn't stop them from winning. So,
they're undefeated. I shouldn't say that. They lost yesterday in those. So I guess the Giants are undefeated. They're not. All right, so game three, you know, here we go. The Mets have now lost five in a row or six in a row to the Dodgers and the Giants. They're just falling out of the NL East race as Atlanta has now taken a decent lead out there. It was just one of those games, man. I felt it was funny. Usually when, you know, that one-run lead, especially a 1-0 lead, there's something magical about that shutout, you know. Plus Casale was catching, and we're all thinking – it's got to be another shutout. I actually had all the confidence in the world that McGee was going to close that out. Usually I'm like, I was like, he's got this. Casale's in there. It's a shutout. It's happening. And then he hit Pete Alonso to start off the inning and then eventually moved to third on a single. And then a sac fly scored him. And it was just one of those frustrating at-bats. I mean, Alonso could have hit a tank. We don't know. But he hit him. I mean, put him on. You're just like, leadoff hit batter. That never spells good stuff. So, unfortunately, the Giants, you know, allowed the tying run there in the ninth. The Mets pushed one across in the 11th. The Giants actually tied it in the bottom of the 11th. And then in the 12th, Tyler Chatwood, it just fell apart for him. And it was ex-Giant, our old friend, Kevin Pillar, with doing the major damage, a three-run bomb. And they scored four in the inning and won 6-2. So the Giants broke their, I think that was a six-game winning streak snap at that point. But, you know, they're going to lose at some point. It's just, it hurts. It hurts when it's lost in that fashion. But, look, one-run leads in the ninth are never guarantees.
No. The bullpen did a hell of a job to get it there in the first place. Disco went down with the ankle early in this game, and then the Giants had to play mix and match the rest of the way.
you know, their pitching came in and did one hell of a job. I mean, Alvarez threw an inning and 2/3. Littell threw 2 innings. And then Garcia, Leon, and Rogers got it to McGee. And, I mean, I think just law of averages, one of these guys is going to get touched up for a run. It happened to be McGee when he hit Alonso with 2 strikes. You know, I can't put any of the blame on the pitching. The Giants had bats in their hands, too. And Tyler McGill was fantastic for the Mets, but he only lasted 6 innings. So you would have thought that the Giants would be able to break through. That you knew we were in for a long haul when Disco went down for that game. And it was one that got away from the Giants. They really should have won that game, especially in the 10th when the Mets didn't score their run. You're sitting there, you're like, okay, great. The Giants are going to win this game. You know, all they got to do is get a base hit to the outfield and it's over. And instead, in the bottom of the 10th, you know, Posey, he moves Yastrzemski over with a fly ball. Slater got hit by a pitch, and then Longo pops it up, and then Wade hits a fly ball, and they're out of the inning, and the Mets managed to escape. And I can't blame Tyler Chatwood. I really can't. He was the last guy left in the bullpen. I feel bad for him. I really do, because the guy's going to turn into this year's Dan Uggla if the Giants win it all.
Oh,
he's going to be the guy who got torched when he was a Giant and win a ring if the Giants win a ring. And
that's right.
You remember, Uggla famously went like 0-for-12 with 9 Ks or something like that when he was a Giant.
Yeah.
So I don't blame I felt bad for Chatwood. By the second inning after the Pilar home run, it was just like, you know, this poor guy, he joins the best team in baseball and he's the last man standing in the bullpen and he gives up 5 runs.
Yeah. No, it was one, he gave up that the one in the 11th, which again, with that lead runner, it's not a charged run. And you know, there's only so much you could do, but you know, when you're the home team and the visitors don't score in the top half, you have all the advantage in the world because you have the results of what the visitors did, right? As a visitor, you don't have the results of the home team. So it's a gamble if you're a visitor to, let's say, sacrifice the runner over to third, right?
They did that too. The Mets did that in the 10th, and that's why they didn't – and that's why they didn't score. And it was so funny because watching it in real time, I remember immediately calling out that strategy going, what are the Mets doing here? They're giving away outs when they don't – you need to score 2, 3, or 4 runs in this day and age in the top half of an extra inning.
Yeah, as a
visitor. You can't just settle for knocking one across. You have to assume the other team's going to knock theirs across too.
You do. You got to shoot for 2 as visitor. It's kind of like, coming up and you're down by 1. You need to get 2. The Giants, on the other hand, effectively did that with Posey's fly ball to right, move the runner to third. But like you said, it was, you know, there was a hit by pitch in there, but it was an irrelevant runner. But then you had the strikeout, then the flyout. Would have been better if we did the flyout first, because that might have driven in the run. But again, one of those games that just it leaked away. 162 games a year, you're going to have these. They've had plenty of these, you know, like how many, I know this wasn't a walk-off because the visitors were in, but as we know, the Giants have been walked off a lot this year. And, but again, they're resilient. So it's been great. So they travel, they have an off day, much needed off day. Like you said, the bullpen was fantastic. That previous game with Disco going out, they had to eat up a lot of innings. So they needed that day off, which I'm sure they appreciated. And they didn't have to go far, just across the bay to Oakland. Oakland's having a great season. They're in the hunt with the wild card. And that first game just didn't happen. They lost 4-1. They had a solo shot in there again, more runs by home run. And they ended up losing. So it, started to feel a little ominous at this point. And it was funny because after the game, there was a reporter who asked, Kapler about, you know, how the guy's doing with this losing streak. And the guy, Kapler was like, just correct me if I'm wrong. We've lost 2 in a row, right? You know, and it's true. It's, I think this team has been so good all year long, and with the Dodgers knocking on the door, winning all those games in a row, and the Giants losing 2 games in 2 days is actually 2.5 games in 3 days, because on their off day, the Dodgers won. So they gained 2.5 games in 3 days, and suddenly it was like the sky is falling. And yeah, you know, with the Oakland team on the road, and you know, the A's always play the Giants tough, no matter what. They're always tough. You just kind of had this sinking feeling, and I think it was game 2. When you texted us when the Giants were down, and they were down by a decent amount early, especially after that first inning. And we'll just jump to that now because that first game was a stinker. First inning, Wilmer Flores just, you know, throws it away. runner goes to third, and three runs score that inning, all unearned runs, and all because of the error. And you're thinking, oh, crap, they just lost two in a row. Dodgers gained two and a half games in 3 days, and we just gave the A's three runs in the first inning. Oh, crap. But that's it. This is going to be the start of a five-game losing streak or something. It didn't happen. I think the Giants were down as far as 6-2, I believe, if I'm correct.
I'm going through it now. 3-2, 4-2, 5-2, 5-2.
Okay, 5-2 they were down. And they started knocking on the door. And 3, 4, 5. Oh, yeah, it couldn't have been 6-2. They didn't score that many.
5-2. Right. And then the top of the seventh, yeah.
Then they had those, was it back-to-back home runs, right? In the,
yep, Belt and thing. Then Ruff. Belt was involved in two back-to-backs this week.
Yeah, with Brian earlier in the week.
Yep.
As I bring it up here, there we go. And, of course, what the Giants have excelled at this year is not just hitting the long ball, but hitting the long ball when they're called off the bench in clutch, high-leverage situations. And that's where the Giants found themselves. After those back-to-back home runs cut the lead in half down to 5-4, Lamont Wade Jr. was tapped on the bench to come up against the righty with one out, one runner on base, and in the top of the ninth, and this is what happened.
High and deep to right, down the line, it is out of here! Exactly what Javier Lopez was talking about, and the Giants take the lead.
What an at-bat by Lamont Wade Jr. Kapler once again pulling the right strings. The Giants fans erupting. A's fans stunned. Wow.
Did he get the barrel of the bat out?
Brandon Belt on first with a walk. I mean, I love that. That's the thing. You talk about pushing the right buttons. That was their 13th pinch hit homer of the year, which was leading baseball at the time. And we'll get to their 14th. but it was their 13th pinch hit homer of the year. And the guy Wade was pinch hitting for was Ruff, who had homered in his last at bat.
I know.
So it's like they have to trust the process, and it worked. It completely worked out. And Wade Jr., my man, is so cool. This guy is so cool under pressure. I love this guy. I really do. You want him up in the ninth inning or later. He's fantastic. I mean, ice through that guy's veins.
His swagger reminds me of a little Bonds Jr., doesn't it? I mean, just
– yeah.
It's just the way he kind of – especially that last at-bat, he just, like, swung it, kind of did the little bat drop. Like, yeah, I got that. No problem. I got it. You know, it was like he was just expected it to happen. You know, he didn't even, like, go, yeah, or, like, something. Or, like, oh, my God, look what I did. He was just like, yeah, that's what I do.
Well, he threw up the Wakanda Forever sign the moment the ball landed right before he rounded first base.
Yeah. Yeah, it was
so apparently
really,
that's his thing now. That's going to be the thing now for Lamont Wade Jr. Yeah, he does it. He does that right before he's rounding first.
Yeah. I wonder if it has anything to do because, you know, it's supposed to be the W or whatever, if it's like Wade or something. But cool. I don't know. I'm just surmising.
There'll be an article about it. If the Giants keep winning, we're going to learn.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then Jake McGee, of course, comes right back out there and nails it down for the save. And everybody was like freaking out about it. But no problems. Then we go to the rubber game yesterday, game number 3 of the series, and whew, Giants, zero offense, nothing. I think they had 3 hits up to this point. Top of the 8th, 2 outs and a runner on first. And who does Kapler call on? Oh, the heavy power hitting Donovan Solano. I mean, out of all the guys that could do it, but he had a no count, first pitch of the at-bat. And this is what happened.
And Solano hits a high drive to left. It is out of here. And they've done it again. The Giants take the lead on a pinch hit home run.
Unbelievable. Oh, my gosh. Seen this first movie
team
before. Donovan Solano does it.
Unbelievable.
And the Giants, you can't defend a walk. It happened last night. Can't defend the walk. Next guy hits the homer. Belt draws it last night. Slater this afternoon.
So Gabe talked about it. He talked about the reason they sent Slater up first was because it was his ability to work a walk, to get on base, that they wanted before they sent Solano up there. And the irony of ironies is, wasn't Solano pinch hitting for Lamont Wade Jr., the guy who hit the pinch hit homer the day before? I mean, how crazy is all that? Every button that they push, it's just the right button.
It's just incredible. They haven't scored the entire game. They have three hits. They get the walk by Slater. Solano, he's not a power-hitting guy. He hits a couple here and there. He's just a normal utility kind of infielder, you know, decent average. And then he crushes one in the right spot, in the right situation. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that makes championship teams. It really does. Is, you know, hitting those moments when they really, really count.
His preparation got him there, too. This is, again, a testament to the Giants and their coaching staff. Apparently, the technology is not the best at the A's park, and so it's harder to queue up videos and get reps because there's no batting cage, so Solano couldn't go swing beforehand. And all he got to do was see a quick few things of A.J. Puck, and after talking to the hitting coaches, they just decided, look for something in or half, something hard, and just swing.
And that was the first pitch, man.
Yep. And so he saw it right away, and he's just like, all right, this is my pitch, and swung, and, you know, and the rest is Giants A's history. The Giants take the Bay Bridge Trophy, winning 4-2 this season. Yeah. I know everybody was sweating whether or not they'd be able to bring that trophy back to
so
Oracle
important
Park.
To have. You know, they they put that on display for all the fans to come and take pictures of at Oracle Park. It's, you know, it's always prominent. It's like, I've never seen the damn thing, so. It's like no one really cares about it. It's a stupid marketing thing. I know it was just recently renamed for I'm sorry, I don't have his name in front of me. I just saw it over the weekend. But it's named for a longtime Bay Area guy that both teams apparently has a connection to. But I'm like, okay, well, that's nice for his family. And, you know, they named it after him. But, you know, overall,
I think
it really doesn't matter.
Tom Pellick. I think they did it. Yeah, it's Tom Pellick. I think they did that just so we'd all stop making fun of it, and it's just not
maybe good. Like now you're like, oh, you gotta respect it a little bit more, I guess.
Right. It's named for a dead guy, but no, I'm sure Tom was a swell guy, and he might have come up with the idea, but nobody cares about the Bay Bridge. But hey, I guess the Giants. You know, the other amazing thing about this Giants A's series is how much it mimicked and mirrored Giants A's last year at Oracle, where the Giants had two leads going into the ninth inning on back-to-back games, where the A's came roaring back, one, you know, against Trevor Gott, I think both of them. So, I mean, thank goodness we have a better bullpen. But it was very weird that they would have such two series like that in back-to-back years against each other. One of the A's players, I read a write-up, one of the A's players was the one to comment on that and be like, it's kind of amazing when you think about it, how we, you know, did this to them last year, and then they just came back and did it to us. Yep. And they are the first team, the Giants are the first team in baseball history to hit a pinch hit homer in the eighth inning or later in back-to-back games to bring them from a trailing to leading in the game. Yep. They're the first team ever to do it in back-to-back games. And it's just, it's one of many of those things they seem to have checked off this year.
Well, it just shows you, you know, baseball, it seems like everything has happened, right? At least a couple of times. This is one of those I would have presumed would have happened. I would have said, in the hundreds of thousands of Major League Baseball games that have ever happened, I'm sure a team has had a pinch hit home run in the eighth inning or later to win two games in a row. I'm sure that's happened. Nope. This is the first time. Yeah. First time it's ever. And it was put in question, by the way, yesterday, because that was in the top of the eighth. He hit that home run, and then the A's got two runners in scoring position in the bottom of the eighth against Rogers, but he got Olsen there, so.
Tyler Rogers. I mean, he's been a roller coaster to watch too, just because you fear it. But then he always comes through. That's the nice thing about it.
And then Jake McGee came right back in, back to back days, and got the save. So again, so many people, whenever he blows a save, oh my God, what is this guy doing in here? And it's like, oh my God, they don't have anyone else right now. And by the way, there was, you know, he was pitcher of the month, right? We know that, or reliever of the month in July. He had 25 consecutive appearances without giving up a run. I mean, he was just money, money, money. His overall stats are still very good. But everybody was crying about going out to get a reliever, specifically like a
Craig Kimbrel.
Thank you. Kimbrel, thank you for that. Have you seen his line since he joined the White Sox? It's awful. It's awful. He doesn't even have a save yet with them. I mean, this is not good. He's been absolutely just awful with them. So sometimes a change of scenery is good. Sometimes when, you know, and Kimbrel's been like this in the past. And I know I talked about it before the trade deadline. I'm like, he's having an amazing year this year, but you've seen him have bad years before. There's no guarantee he's going to switch teams and have a good time. And that's what's happening with the White Sox. Tony La Russa is not happy with his performance. They gave away a lot to get this guy, and he's just not
a
bargain. So
that seemed to be the biggest haul that the Cubs got for any of their trades, to be honest with you. I thought that was kind of impressive.
Yeah, so far, White Sox are getting screwed on that deal. But we'll see. You know, maybe in the playoffs he'll be money and it'll all be water.
I mean, they have a 9.5 game lead. So,
yeah,
I mean,
that's what I mean. Like, it's kind of like, okay, he can blow saves right now. It really doesn't matter. You know, they're gonna be in fine. It's gonna be okay. So one of the things that we've noted is you know, I know it was a couple of weeks ago the Giants were at 54% of their runs were scored via the long ball. It's probably still around that number. The Giants scored all 9 runs of this series against the A's via the home run. And so one of the things that they were talking about this morning, and the thing that I think we've talked about at least a couple of times, is it bad or good, or is there a reason, indifferent, that the Giants are relying on this home run? Look what it did for them this weekend. It snatched 2 losses and turned them into victories with those home runs, right? So would you rather have a team that is much better at manufacturing runs and is light hitting, or would you rather have a team like the Giants that overall is a good team, may not be the best at manufacturing runs, but really excel in getting runs in bunches via the long ball?
I mean, it's tough because it's what's working. You know what I mean? And
that's exactly the way Kruko put it. He said, no one ever wants to talk about the labor pains. They just want to see the baby. And the Giants are making babies right now, right? Mm-hmm. It's painful. It doesn't look pretty sometimes, and they don't excel at everything, but they got the baby out. And that's the whole thing. It's like, okay, well, they're winning. So, and they've won over a very long duration of time. It's not like they were hot for a month with long balls and that's why they won. It's working. So, yeah, their average with runners in scoring position isn't so great, but, you know, they're not bunting runners over. They're not stealing bags as much. But that's okay, because all it takes is a conniving walk by a Brandon Belt or Austin Slater followed by a timely pinch hit home run, and it's water under the bridge, baby.
It's nothing all of a sudden. I mean, it does get tiresome. It feels like I think it's weird because, you know, it's like the whole 6 of one, half a dozen of the other. You don't know. Whatever's working at the time is what's right. And that's really the best short view of it, because I don't think the Giants expected to depend on the long ball like this. I think it's just kind of gravy, but it's the reason they're winning the games.
Right.
They would not be winning as many games if they weren't relying on the long ball. They're hitting .250 with runners in scoring position overall, which really isn't horrible, but it should be better. When there's runners on base, all the pressure is on the defense at that
point.
And they should definitely be hitting better than that. I mean, runners in scoring position, 2 outs, they're only hitting .225. And I think when they go through stretches like facing Washington or facing Pittsburgh sometimes, where they leave runners out there, it really gets highlighted when they don't score runs via the home run. But, I mean, if it's going to keep working, you can't – it's so hard to argue with success, no matter what the process is. It's so hard to argue with success. And I think that the Giants would prefer to win games more traditionally, but they'll be happy to take this many long balls if that's what's keeping them in it.
Yeah, I think it is. Just as a fan, you do get frustrated with them leaving runners on base and scoring position all the time, and you're just like, man, sometimes you just can't get that timely hit. But they've had spurts where they've had a bunch of 2-out RBIs, right? 2-out hits, as your handle describes. It's just one of those things where you look at the overall success rate with runs scored and their run differential, they're at the top of the league. So, yeah, they may not be the best at knocking in runners from scoring position, but they're way better than most other teams at knocking everyone in, including the batter. So,
I mean, if it wasn't for the home runs, they wouldn't have the best record in baseball, but would they be competing for the wild card spot right now? Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
If you scale back like 20 home runs from the Giants, they'd still be competing for a wild card spot right now. So they're a good team overall. It's going to get them a little farther. And these are the games. These games against Oakland. Oakland's a tough team, although they didn't really hit this weekend. Marte was the only one who really hit for them this weekend.
Yeah, he's a spark plug.
But oh my God, that guy's so annoying. I'd love to have him on my team. They kept the Giants' bats in check, and the Giants were still able to win these games. This is how you win games in the postseason.
I was about to say. So in the postseason, these are the dramatic moments that happened. The Giants were just two pinch hitters away from getting swept by the A's. Yep. Think about that. They were that close to being swept by the A's, and we would have been talking a much different story right now. They would have a half-game lead. The sky would have been falling. They would have lost four in a row. We would have been like, oh, my God, this is it. This is the end of the season. But no, they're Kapler, man, 14 pinch-hit home runs this year.
It's unbelievable. Well, stupid. I mean, I was thinking they need to stop calling them pinch-hit home runs when the Giants hit them and call them shift-change home runs because yeah, they're right. Always when they're doing these line shifts and, you know, all the lefties are coming in or all the righties are coming in. That's, again, what made it even more fascinating. One day it was a lefty who hit it to the right field corner. The next day it was a righty who hit it to the left field corner. Mm-hmm. It's like just – I mean, we're never going to see anything like that before. Kipe said it after Solano's yesterday. He's like, folks, he's like, you could sometimes go a season or two without seeing a pinch-hit home run flip a lead late in a game like this, and we saw it in back-to-back days.
Yeah,
it was just – it was absolutely stunning, and it's part of why they do that, and that's why, you know, if you're going to depend on a long ball, get them at the right time.
And like you said, you know, pinch hitting for guys who just hit home runs. With Darren Ruff and Lamont Wade. It's like it blows the mind because, like, you know, you and I growing up playing ball, and even lately when I was playing amateur ball, it was like we'd never take a guy out at a home run in the game to pinch hit with another guy just because of a matchup. We'd be like, hell no, he's crushed it today. Leave him in there. You know, it's so funny how this works sometimes.
They couldn't have done this with Bochy. There's no way Bochy would have been the manager to push these kind of buttons. They need a Kapler-like person, Kapler, to be their manager and their guiding force here because he's bought into all the analytics and he's willing to implement them and steady his hand. And apparently he's gotten everybody in the ball club to buy in. You know, he said it after yesterday's win. He's like, the selflessness around here is amazing. You know, just referencing Solano and Listella and how they've, you know, bonded over platooning at second. A lot of the guys are just pulling for each other so much. And it's part of what makes this team special. We're talking about a special bunch. You know, we're going to be talking about 2021, you know, good 15, 20 years from now.
Yeah, I mean, I know that when Kapler brought in a bunch of his coaching team last year and whatever additions he made this year, you know, there were a lot of people without major league experience. There were a lot of people who never played in the majors, let alone the minors. There were a lot of people who were all about analytics and brain number crunchers. And everyone's like, where are the OG scouts? Where are the people who can just, you know, judge if a player passes the stink test or the eye test, right? And it's been a full staff buying in to this process and these analytics and this minutia. And of course, Farhan is at the head of all of this. And it is really amazing to find a manager who is simpatico with all of this, which we were against him, of course, more for social reasons and what kind of happened in the past, but also because of his history with the Philadelphia bullpen and managing arms, which kind of reared its ugly head early with the Giants. Everything seemed to have settled down into a rhythm and a pattern, and everyone seems to be on board, and it seems to be working way better than most of us expected. And so there's nothing but props to give to not just Kapler, but his coaching staff of very inexperienced people, some of them, many of them, and of course to Farhan. And I still see people complain about certain things here and there. Why are they all about the numbers? Oh, this is so stupid. The shift and this and that. It's like, yeah, it's not traditional baseball, but it's working. And it worked the last 2 days in Oakland. That's just a microcosm of the entire season. You can't argue with results, just like with the home run issue. You can't argue with results.
It's a new kind of baseball in one sense, but it's just taking all of the old fundamentals of baseball and applying them in a very different way. And I love that we're kind of the laboratory. I don't feel like the Dodgers and the A's are built the way the Giants are built as far as under Farhan's rule. I think that this team is a little different. Like, he's tweaked some stuff along the way. Mm-hmm. And I think things like the three batter rule have really benefited the Giants. They, more so than anybody else, have those shift changes. So, you know, the A's bring in a lefty reliever. All right, cool. We got three righties in a row to come off the bench and spoil your party. You know, that's
what they'll do. Kap will exhaust his bench in the eighth inning or the seventh inning with three right-handers in a row if it means the best chances of scoring to either tie or go ahead. Yeah, it's just it is what it is. And if it's kind of like, you know, taking that shot at the craps table. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But over the long haul, that's going to increase your percentages of winning more than not doing it. And that's the whole thing. It's like, you know, they look, it's kind of like if you play the book with blackjack, right? You have a 16 and the dealer's showing a 10. Well, the book says to hit. Does that mean you're going to win? No. But it's better than standing on 16. Now, if the dealer's showing a 3 or 4 or 5 or 6, well, then you're going to hit that 16. Because, again, chances are better than holding on that 16 over a long period of time. That's essentially what the Giants are doing in a very simple metaphor. They are looking at the odds of, like, what gives us the best chances of scoring a run in this inning. I'll fire all three bullets. I don't care. This lefty's coming in. He's got to face three in a row. He doesn't do well against righties. This guy's a history. Okay, put them all three in. Boom. Yep. Let's see what happens.
Because the guy can't go anywhere. There's no running from that. There's no counter move to make. You're making the final move. Right. You're making the final move at this point. So it's fascinating how they've incorporated that as a team. And that's why we're seeing the results. That's why there are 14 pinch hit home runs. I mean, I looked it up last week, or no, I looked it up for something else. I'm going to look it up now. The Giants on average have 2.5 pinch hitters per game, and they've never had more than probably one on average per game in any year. And it's just a completely different way to do things, but it's a good way to do things. They keep showing, and they have to keep juggling the roster to keep up with this depth. I mean, every day we got something else going on, you know, like Longo here, he's on the COVID IL from COVID complications, but you know, he also happened to get hit in the finger the other day and hasn't played in
total
3 days.
Coincidence though, right. Farhan says.
He'll be back Tuesday apparently.
Wink.
Which is kinda nice.
Yeah. I know exactly.
Oh, Mike, Jay Jackson went on the COVID one.
Yep,
yeah.
Yep. I was going to ask a question about that. I know it hasn't been, I don't believe it was ever mandated or required for all Major League Baseball players to get the vaccine, correct? Am I correct?
No,
in that?
Correct.
I've never
heard
that.
I believe so.
So my question is, with the vaccine have been out so long, I don't understand why suddenly Jay Jackson got it and suddenly Evan Longoria, who was on the freaking IL for 2 months, didn't get it during that entire time. Like, those are questions I would love to have someone answer, because it just seems like, I don't know. Do they have to prove to Major League Baseball that indeed Evan Longoria received a shot either the first or second on this date, and therefore it's plausible that he had vaccine effects? Or does every player get an IL stint from the COVID list at any time for any reason, and they just go, he just got the shot. Well, when did he get it? Well, he got it. Well, when? Yeah, he got it. He got it. You know what I mean? Like, what if he got it 3 months ago? Yeah, it's exactly. So it's like, it's funny how, if that is true, that they don't have to show all that stuff, then Farhan has that tool at his disposal and he's using it well so far, which is
ridiculous.
It cracks me up, man. But I could be wrong about that, because I just never heard the specific rules about it. Maybe it is HIPAA and all that stuff, but
I have no idea. Like, I mean, because it's like, what part of what industries have access? What happens when you sign your contract as a Major League Baseball player? Do you grant access? You know, who do you grant access to? I'm sure the team doctors have access, but is there a Major League Baseball staff? I have no idea.
Would I really believe that Longoria, who was on the IL for 2 months, suddenly get the shot now, right when he gets back on the active roster? When, if you do have a reaction, a legit reaction to the vaccine, that you're going to go back on the IL. And you don't want that as a player. You don't want that as a coaching staff. You want him to have those effects while he's on the IL, right? He's already on the IL. Get your shot now. So that's why I I have a lot of skepticism. And if he really got the shot this week, it just, because it doesn't make sense to do that. It just doesn't. But anyway, we digress. All right, well, let's talk about injuries, which we just started talking about. Longo, of course, on the IL. He was a short 4-for-7, but he's expected back here shortly, possibly tomorrow in New York. Disco, from covering first, has the right ankle inflammation. He's back on the IL. Old friend Reyes Maranta is off the 60-day IL, and now he's been assigned to AAA. So he's someone we fully expect to see come up sometime in maybe late August, but probably September.
I, I don't know, man. I think he lost his roster spot. I really do.
Yeah.
He's underperformed in the minors so far. Walks have been an issue. Yeah. And the Giants bullpen, I mean, look at how much praise we just gave them over the past week. You know, yeah. Every game that they were in, the Giants bullpen kept them in every game. So I don't think there's a spot for Maranta right now. And so they needed to clear him a roster spot. And that's why we're probably going to see another corresponding move happen tomorrow before the game.
Yeah, probably. I'm just curious, you know, with the revolving door of relievers this year, you know, including Tyler Chatwood, you know, if we just expect to see a Maranta just because of his history, but we'll see what happens.
Oh, yeah, probably. Yeah, you might not be wrong there. I mean, Sammy Long is going to get a start this week.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a bullpen game in that. Cueto's coming back from the IL this week. He should be activated to pitch on Wednesday. So, yeah, it's going to go Long, Cueto, and then Wood. And the Giants, I mean, they're going to be facing some good throwers from the Mets. It's not going to be an easy series by any stretch.
No, I know that the Mets have struggled against the Giants and Dodgers, but it doesn't mean they're a horrible team. They just sunk under 500 for the first time, and they're fading behind the Braves. But they're going to be in, you know, Shea Stadium, or City Field, I should say, not Shea anymore. So do you ever do that? I sometimes call it old stadiums just because, you know, you're used to it for your whole life, and then it changes.
I still call Comiskey, and it's you progressive guarantee. I don't even remember what it is now.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Jacobs Field turned to progressive, turned to something else. I don't know what the hell these things are anymore. So it was funny. I had briefly looked at stats for who's hot. I couldn't really find too much. And then you're like, should I fill it out? And I was like, yeah, but you might have lead off. We really couldn't. Despite that, the fact
really
that they
wasn't
were 4-2,
anybody.
They were really that close to going 2-4. So they didn't have a fantastic week.
I only threw – yeah, Crawford had a great week. This was amazing. Oh, my God, they're going to – oh, no. The Red Sox Rangers, sorry. Oh, my God, they are going to tie it after all that. That's crazy. So over the last week, Crawford went 7-21, which is a .333 batting average. But this blew my mind. He didn't drive in a single – no, he drove in one run, and he didn't score a single run. Like, it didn't seem to matter that he went 4-4 that one night except for driving in the one run. It's unbelievable. But I also love that Crawford is still getting it done and not just hitting bombs. I think that's a good sign. Like, Dick went 5-14 this week, and that was one of the best ones. And then I found KB. He hit 3 homers this week, which is good, but he went 4-21, which is not good. And not just good. Like earlier, we highlighted Brandon Belt hit 111 over the past week, but he was involved in 2 back-to-back home runs that were very key to Giants' victory. So, you know, they're not getting a lot of hits. They're just getting them at the right times right now.
They're getting them at the right time. So that's who's hot, is just their timeliness, right? Timeliness.
Yeah, Gabe Kapler and his computer are hot.
Yeah, Tony Watson, I just wanted to highlight the fact that he had a 4.64 ERA with the Angels, and he obviously had a very good track record with the Giants, and it was a small kind of under the radar move, but guys like you and me recognize the value in that, going, yeah, Farhan sees it being a significant positive of him being back in this league with these lineups and this clubhouse, which he's a great clubhouse guy. There's a lot of intangible reasons. So far, it's coming up smelling like roses. Since joining the Giants, 9 innings pitched, no runs, 3 hits, 7 Ks, and he has lowered his season ERA a full run from 4.64 to 3.64. So far, it looks like a genius move. It's amazing.
Wow. And the thing of it is, too, is if McGee is struggling, Watson can close on the back end and alternate with Rodgers if need be. He was that lefty role, you know, and then he left. McGee now fills that role. So Watson could absolutely do that again. I have no problem when he comes in the games right now. He's like, it seems like he's been a Giant all year at this point already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's really good to see him back in the black and orange. It's fantastic. And I agree. I think it was kind of definitely a setup guy, a guy who could replace a McGee or Rodgers if needed. And then if McGee shits the bed, then yeah, he's there for the ninth, along with Rodgers too, which I know he's been there, but he's just one of those guys you can still kind of go, as a ninth inning guy. He's done it. He's just not your first choice, but that's it basically for who's hot. So coming up, the Giants do have 3 in City. Did I say it right? Yeah. City Field.
Yep.
At the Mets, and then 3 in Atlanta. And Atlanta is hot, man. I think they've won 9 in a row. They've claimed the East lead. I think they're up by like 4.5 games over the Phils now. So they are not a team to – not five now? Oh, man.
Yeah, full five games on the Phillies and
two
seven
homers
on the Mets.
Behind the Giants, yeah. Seven on the Mets now? Wow, the Mets have just plummeted. They were in first place like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's like, wow. But, I mean, think about that. They've only won two games against the Giants and Dodgers in the last, like, nine or ten, right? And then the Braves won nine in a row. So there you go. That's like flipping seven games right there. Right there. In a couple of weeks, so I'm sure
I have no idea.
Mets fan, they're just like, what the hell's going on?
Oh, I mean, look at this. The Braves' schedule is littered with St. Louis, Washington, Miami, and Baltimore over the last month.
Yeah.
So no wonder why the Braves have gotten hot. Cincinnati's the toughest team they faced in the last. Well, they're playing new. Wait, I'm looking at the Braves' schedule, right? Yeah. The Braves are playing the Yankees before. That's weird, too. The Braves are playing the Yankees in two games on Monday and Tuesday, and then they're off Wednesday and Thursday before the Giants come to town. So the Braves not only are hot,
they have
but they get
games off in
two,
a row?
Two off days in a row before the best team in baseball comes to town. That's weird.
I honestly don't know if I've ever seen that in a regular season, aside from the All-Star break.
Yeah, it's on the schedule, too. You know what I mean? Like, I'm looking at it, and the boxes are blacked out. Like, that's originally how it was scheduled.
Wow. Oh, that is so bizarre. Well, boy, they can kind of reset parts of the rotation to face the Giants.
Yeah.
That's not cool. That sucks for the Giants. Oh, well, that's part of the schedule. It happens, right?
We were laughing about the Mets and what they had to deal with last week. So it's like, you know, all right, cool.
All right, they got to do it, so it's fine.
Yeah.
And then We'll talk amongst ourselves, but we may be coming to you either Sunday or Tuesday of next week, because most likely I will be heading up to cover the Brewers game at Oracle Park on Monday. And I have some errands to run prior to that in the Bay Area, so I will probably not be available to record on Monday. But we'll figure it out, because as we come down, I think we only have about 5 weeks of ball left in the regular season. So it's getting serious, Eric. We got just under a quarter of the season left. This is the last quarter turn. It's the last lap of the mile, right?
Yeah. It's awesome, though. They're fighting for everything. Who knew? 80 wins. They were the first to 50. They were the first to 60, the first to 70, the first to 80. It would be really nice if the Giants are the first to 100. But it's just another week where they come out with a winning record that we get to sit here and talk about. The best team in baseball, and you know what more can you ask for as a Giants fan right now? You really can't ask for much more. They've been in first place since like May 30th. They've had the best record in baseball for at least 2-3 months. So even if they don't finish it off, it's going to continue to be fun. This East Coast road trip is a big test, and if the Giants can come away with just even going 3-3 in this road trip, I think that we should be satisfied as fans. I mean, I hope they'll go 4-2 or 5-1, but if they go 3-3, that's totally fine with me.
Again, holding serve on the road is always an admirable goal, and fine, it's treading water. Yep. It's just the issue of the Dodgers chasing them, and they got, San Diego and then Colorado, so it's kind of like, you could see LA having a really good week this week, so maybe the Padres will stop Padre-ing and actually, you know, steal a couple games from the Dodgers this week. But I kind of doubt it right now, the way the Padres are.
Padres playing. Fired their pitching coach, Larry Rothschild. Like, that is the problem or something.
Yeah.
Like,
now the season's got to turn around. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he's the reason Jake Arrieta stunk when you brought him in for a start. He's the reason Yu Darvish is hurt. I mean, come on, man. He's the reason Blake Snell never should have been signed in the first place. It's all Larry's fault.
All him, man. Yeah, it's on the field, baby. So he doesn't know how to talk to him during the pitching changes and all that stuff.
Apparently not. Yeah, so Larry's gone.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for episode 235 of the TorchCast. Like I said, we record every Monday. Next week will be either Sunday or Tuesday. We always go live on Facebook. You can get our audio version, of course, on any major podcast network, be it Apple or Spotify, Google, Stitcher. It's all there. You can find our videos on Facebook. You can follow us collectively on Twitter at TortureCast. Like us on Facebook. Follow us individually at ChadK21 for myself, at Two Out Hits for Eric. That's with the number two, by the way. And for the missing Willie Dills Gregory, you can follow him at Willie Dills. I think he's enjoying a nice round of golf in the Austin heat today. So
lucky guy.
Might have chosen to do the same thing. A few beverages with that. It's a good day. It's a good day. But I like talking Giants ball with you too as well, Eric. But
we should have had him do it from the course. I mean, he's got time in between. You know, he totally could have jumped on.
He could have just held up his phone, put his beer down, propped up his phone on the beer, showed us a couple of swings. Yeah.
Hold on, guys. I got to take a shot. You know.
Yeah.
We can
scream. We're yelling on the phone. He forgot to mute it. That's awesome. Do you have anything to pimp?
Nah, just Giants Chatter on Facebook. Go join, chat, have fun during games. You know, we got all sorts of discussions going all the time. And that's about it. I'm about to go crush a pizza and take a nap.
Oh, sounds like a good afternoon. I get to go pick up kids and deal with them the rest of the day. Yay! First full day, by the way, of having kids in school till 3 p.m. in 529 days. So
wow.
Today has been a small cause to celebrate.
Is it because eerily quiet at home all of a sudden?
Yeah, my wife's working from home upstairs, and it's eerily quiet. I kind of dig it. So this is good do this on Monday. So, all right, well, that'll do it. Thanks, everyone, for joining, listening, et cetera. Have a fantastic week. Get your vaccine, please. It's been fully approved by the FDA. Don't use that as an excuse anymore. Let's get this pandemic shut down, and let's move on with life. Other than that, have a safe week, and we'll see you next week for episode 236. Aboom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.